I'm sorry to disappoint all of you. All of you come to hear Rolis Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj. It's always an unenviable position to try to substitute for a more illustrious speaker. So I seek the blessings of all of you so that I can try to speak something worthwhile for the glorification of the Lord and the purification of my own filthy heart. So, we'll discuss two main themes, two misconceptions we will address in this class, one based on the purport and one based on the conception of the universal form. So, the first misconception is that there is only material that exists and there is nothing spiritual. That is the scientific misconception. And the second misconception is that matter has nothing to do with spirit, which is the Semitic misconception or the misconception of the Western religions, especially Christianity and Islam. So, let's go over this one by one. Srila Prabhupada in the purport explains that matter in itself does not grow. It grows by the presence of spirit. In modern science, there is a great emphasis on study of matter. And there is a historical reason for that. Science achieved its greatest successes in the study of matter. Now, when there were these Galileo, Copernicus, Newton, all of them, they studied physics. Now, physics is the study of the structure of matter. And they made remarkable strides in that, by which they made the laws of mechanics, and now we have mechanical engineering, automobiles, airplanes. So, subsequently, by the application of those principles discovered in physics, to not only the structure of matter, but to the interactions of matter, which is chemistry, they achieved further successes in combining matters, in separating matters, creating new chemicals and synthetic compounds. So, the study of matter helped man to get control over material world and even transform material world for apparently the better. So, subsequently, most scientists adopted the approach derived from physics and chemistry to even study biology. Biology, bio is life, logos is study of life. So now if you go to a doctor, a medical doctor's ideas, allopathic doctor's idea is, any problem in the body, it's mainly a problem of either anatomy or physiology. The structure of the body is wrong, or something of the chemical composition of the body is wrong. Which may be partially correct, but even if we have a completely structurally and physiologically correct body, it may be dead. That doesn't create life. So, modern society has an idea that biology is nothing but applied physics and chemistry. So, Prabhupada talks in this purport of a fundamental difference. Why biology cannot be applied physics and chemistry? Because, you know, if I break this stamp, it will break, it will crack. But if somebody cuts my hand, there will be a crack also. But then over time it will heal. This will not heal. So matter undergoes only three transformations. First is creation, second is deterioration, and third is destruction. So we create a house, it takes a long time to create it, and if we leave it as it is, it will get deteriorated. And eventually it will be destroyed. On the other hand, living matter is oxymoron. Oxymoron means a contradictory word. It's like if you say chaste prostitute. That's an oxymoron. So like that, living matter cannot be living. So living matter means that, not exactly, the matter is never living, but matter through which life is manifesting. So matter through which life is manifesting undergoes not three changes, but six changes. There's creation, then there is growth. You know, a small infant grows. You know, sometimes science fiction movies show that there is a robot. And they may show a he robot and a she robot, and they have a baby robot. The baby robot is not going to grow. They have to create a separate baby robot which will stay as it is. So, when there is life manifesting through matter, it grows. Then, as I explained, it maintains itself. And there is attempt actively to maintain itself. And not only that, it reproduces. No matter, even in some instances, computers may be more intelligent than human beings also. But computers don't reproduce. And you know, sex is one of the biggest problems for the theory of evolution. Why? Because if we look at nature, practically speaking, sex is a very dangerous activity. You know, just like we have in the Mahabharata story of the Rishi who took the form of a deer and a she-deer to unite, and some hunter came and shot. So actually, sex is an activity which blinds a person to everything else and absorbs it. And actually, in nature, when there is so much struggle for existence, so sex can be very dangerous. You know, somebody is having bodily interaction and some predator comes and attacks and eats both the mate and both the mates. So now there are organisms which reproduce asexually also. But then an asexual reproduction is much more efficient, much more safe than sexual reproduction. So science doesn't know why sex is, why evolution should have preserved sex at all. Because sex is very dangerous, and that which is dangerous, that which is detrimental, should be eliminated by evolution. So they don't have any understanding. So the philosophical understanding is that the soul who wants to imitate Krishna by controlling, that soul is, by controlling and enjoying another form, that soul is given the facility for sex. And somebody who does, some souls who do very, very sinful activities in the name of satisfying their lusty propensities, they are put in bodies where they are deprived even of the lusty propensity. So that is the form in which there is asexual reproduction. But our point here is that actually reproduction is something which never happens in matter. So these three changes, growth, maintenance and reproduction, which are not present in material objects, they itself show that the principles of physics and chemistry cannot be applied to biology. To some extent they may be applied partially, which is fine. But they cannot explain the behavior of matter as it is exhibited in living organisms. So therefore, actually speaking, the modern scientific understanding may be useful in manipulating matter. But it can become dreadful if it used to try to understand living systems. So we have so many chaotic situations where the embryo is sometimes considered to be just a lump of flesh. But the lump of flesh is growing. It's not just simple. Sometimes we say people want to do abortion. Now suppose somebody has got some extra growth, you know, something tumorous growth or something like that, and you come and cut it off. And all the relatives will come, and the person who has done the surgery, they will, you know, the doctors did like this and I felt so much pain, and then they did this and then they did this. People talk about the surgery so much. But if somebody does abortion, nobody talks about it. Why? It's not just because of the sense of shame that is associated with it. Because if there is a tumor, that's an extra growth which is going to be cut off. And the tumor is something which is harmful. But the embryo is actually having life. And it is going to have a full life ahead of it. So when we apply just the understanding of biology to, sorry, understanding of physics and chemistry to biology, then we can have, today we can call tissues. You know, we can call living beings as tissues. When Hitler was ruling Germany, he felt that, you know, all people who are physically deficient in any way, they are blind, they are deaf, they are physically handicapped, whatever way they are, you know, they are weak. And nature is going to eliminate them in the struggle for existence. So we will help nature on the way. So they had actually organized houses where they would eliminate these people. So it is organized hospitals, the doctors would do that. So the point is, you know, the value of human life is lost. Not just human life, any life is lost if we apply the principles of physics and chemistry blindly to biology. So there is something higher, something deeper. And that is the consciousness which comes from the soul. Balde Vidyabhushan in the Govinda Bhashya explains that actually there is a relationship of achinta bheda bhed between chetan and chetana. The soul is the entity and consciousness is the energy. So, the consciousness and the soul, they are same and at the same time they are different. Because without soul there is no consciousness. Therefore, in that sense they are same. But the soul is present in the region of the heart, whereas the consciousness is spread all over the body. So, in that sense, the soul and consciousness are different. Achintya Bheda Bheda relationship is there between Chetana and Chetana. Soul and consciousness. So, that's why Srila Prabhupada would be very heavy in propagating this, that, you know, life does not come from matter. And yes, physics and chemistry may be useful in their own ways, but they cannot be applied to life, living systems. That's the first part. So this is the idea that this is the materialistic people, the atheistic materialists, they have the idea that matter is all that exists and then nothing else that exists. But obviously it's not true, because certain matter behaves in ways which other matter does not, and at a material level we cannot explain it. But the other extreme is to say that there is a spiritual realm, but that spiritual realm has no connection with matter at all. So that is the idea of the Western religions. Christianity, Islam, Judaism, their idea is that God is transcendental and He is not at all material. He is not at all present in the material realm. And the kind of descriptions that are there in the Bhagavatam now, what is going on, Vishwarup. This is used by these religionists to accuse the followers of Vedic religion that you people are pantheists. Pantheist means you worship everything as God. Pan means all, theism means God, everything is God. You worship stone as God, you worship rock as God, you worship trees as God, you worship. I recently wrote an article in Spiritual Scientist. You people worship cars also as if they are God. No, we don't worship cars as if they are God. It's actually, you see, the Vedic understanding is very, very profound. You know, in the West, when people came from the West to India, they had their Western simplistic categories. So either you are monotheist, you believe in only one God, or you are polytheist, you believe in many gods. So I think there are only two alternatives. That you believe in one God or you believe in many gods. So, you know, we people, we Muslims, Christians, we are monotheists. And the Greeks who were there earlier, they were all polytheists, and these Hindus are also polytheists. They worship so many gods. But actually, these two options don't exhaust all the alternatives. The Vedic understanding is much more sophisticated. Yes, there is only one God, but that one God takes many forms. There is one God, Krishna, but Krishna comes as Narasimha, he comes as Vishnu. He comes as Varaha, he comes as Vamana. So Garuda Prabhu, in one of his books, he mentions that the Vedic understanding is neither monotheism nor polytheism. It is polymorphic monotheism. Polymorphic monotheism means morphized form. Poly means many. There is only one God, but he manifests in many forms. Therefore, these are these categories of monotheism and polytheism, they are very simplistic. And of course, the sophistication, the depth of the Vedic understanding does not end here. Because we don't only worship one God, actually God is a couple. So there is not only polymorphic monotheism, polymorphic bimonotheism. So, we don't have to worry about these terms if you don't understand them. But the point is that, you know, the people with these very simplistic ideas of religion, they come and they deride the very sophisticated conceptions of religion that are there in the Vedic culture, in the Vedic philosophy. Now, if you look at it simply, you know, yes, Narasimha Dev emerged from pillar. Prahlad Maharaj did not garland the pillar, he garlanded Narasimha Dev. So, obviously, you know, we don't worship everything as God. But, although we don't worship everything as God, we understand that everything is sacred. Everything is the abode of God. God and the Paramatma is present everywhere. So, you know, the Vedic understanding is that in the Vedic philosophy, God's mercy is manifest to the fullest. It is manifest to the fullest in two ways. In one way, the spiritual realm is revealed more than any other tradition. You know, what does God do? What his pastimes are? How does he relate with his devotees? None of this is described in any of the religious traditions. So, even with respect to transcendental realm, the revelation in the Vedic philosophy is far greater. But the greatness of the Vedic philosophy does not end with that. The Vedic philosophy also describes how God manifests himself or diffuses himself through matter in various ways by which we can connect with him, by which we can worship him. If God is only spiritual and he has nothing to do with matter and we are in the material realm and we cannot think of anything except matter, then how can we possibly connect with God? It remains only an intellection. Intellection means just an intellectual process that yes, I am thinking about God. But actually, in our conditioned stage, when we are in the realm of matter, we cannot think of anything spiritual. So, Krishna manifests his mercy in many, many ways. So, Ramacharya describes that, you know, the Supreme Lord has five manifestations. So, he says, Para is the form of Narayana which is there in the spiritual world. Then there is a viewer. Viewer is Asriya Sankarsana Pradyumna. So, that they are, or in mantras like Mahavishnu, Garbhodak, Shavishnu, Dakshya Vishnu, they are connected with the material world. And then there is the Antaryami. Antaryami is the super soul who is present in the heart of all living beings. And the fourth is the avatar who comes in this world periodically to manifest his past life. And the fifth is the archa avatar, the deity. So the Lord repeatedly keeps manifesting himself in the realm of matter by which we can connect with him and think of him. So that is actually Krishna's great mercy. But that does not mean that matter is to be worshipped. But through matter, God is to be worshipped. So if we see in Vedic culture, farmers, they would garland their cows and they would decorate their cows. It would almost seem like they would worship their cows. But what is the understanding? The understanding is that in our conditioned stage, we actually, everything, our very existence is God's mercy. You know, we cannot run our own bodies. Now, we think of our body only when it doesn't work with us. But we can't make it work. So those of us who are sick, we can know that. So, we think of God's grace manifesting through our health, bodily health, only when the health doesn't work. But generally speaking, when we get something good in our life, that is what we value as God's grace. Yes, I get some success, I get some fame, I get some house. So Vedic culture said that, okay, whenever, whatever way we can see God's grace, worship God through that. So for a farmer, the cow and the bull are the source of sustenance and prosperity. So the cow and bull should be worshipped. For the artisan, for the workers, they will worship their tools. Now, it's not that they are thinking their tools to be God. Now, some people who have no philosophical understanding may think like that. But no, that is not the Vedic understanding. Similarly, you know, if we read the Mahabharata, the Pandavas would actually respect and garland their weapons. As devotees, our weapons are our kartals and budangas. So we see in the Bhakti Ratnakar, how before in the Keturi festival the Kirtan started, you know, the kartals and budangas, you know, Chandan was applied on the kartals and budangas. Chandan was applied also on the devotees who were singing, going to sing. And then it started. So the idea is, that which is in the material world, material manifestation, the best, the most important, the most valuable for us, we see God's grace through that. So in our current modern times, people consider car as a sign of status and prosperity. So okay, yena kena prakarena mana Krishna niveshet. If you get a new car, yes, you can even worship the car, and at least for that purpose you will come to the temple. And at least for that purpose, he'll think of Krishna. So it's not that the car is being worshipped, but the grace of God which is manifested to us in an understandable form through the acquirement of the car. That is what is being respected and worshipped. So therefore, that way, the Vedic understanding is that whatever way you can think of God, you think of God. So yes, if you cannot think beyond matter, if you can think of only God's greatness in terms of physical bigness, then there is a universal form. The universal form is surely not the highest understanding given in the Vedic scriptures. It is an intermediate understanding, but it is an important understanding for those who cannot think beyond it in the initial stage. So the Vishwarup actually describes, now Prabhupada elaborately analyzes in the second canto, whether the Vishwarup is real or it is figurative. And Prabhupada explains that actually the conception of God having a material form is wrong. God cannot have a material form. That means that we say that God's eyes are the sun and the moon, the heavenly planets are God's forehead, and the lower planets are the Lord's legs. So, he says, this idea that God has a material form like that, it is wrong. God does not have a material form. But, yena kena prakarena mana Krishna niveshe. That is the principle. Whatever way we can think of God, think of God. So therefore, if the bigness of material things, the greatness, physical greatness of material things can help people to think of God, fine. Think of God in this way. The mountains are the bones, the rivers are the navel, the trees are the hair. So in this way, you think about God. What is important is, we think about God, we connect nature with God. And from that point onwards, once God consciousness begins. So, the important principle is, that Krishna in the Vedic literature manifests his mercy in so many ways to reach out to people. But unfortunately, the sophistication of the Vedic philosophy is not understood. So there are critics of, and of course Prabhupada talks about the Mayavadis in this purport. Well, the Mayavadis Now, when Krishna's great mercy is that he manifests as the deity. Prabhupada in the previous purpose talked about the deity worship. So, you know, we, if we want to develop a relationship, how can we develop a relationship if there is no person? It's very difficult. Now, if you see, in the Vedic literature, Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Yajur Atharva Veda, and even in most of the Upanishads, Aranyakas, there is no mention of deity worship. Why? Because there, the purpose is not to develop a relationship with God. The purpose is to use whatever higher principle, higher power is there to fulfill our material desires. Like many times people even, they come to a temple and they close their eyes and pray fervently. And then they go out and then they ask them, you know, so, you take darshan? He said, yes. Whose darshan you take? Oh, whose darshan? I don't know whose darshan. Something I went and prayed to. So people go and they pray to any deity, you know, they will not even see whether it is God or it is somebody else, it is some ordinary human being being claimed to be God. So, you know, people at the materialistic level, they are not concerned with who they are praying to as long as their desires are fulfilled. So, what is important is my desire should be fulfilled. So, yes, for that karmakanda level of worship, the deity is not necessary. That's why in the Vedic literature, prima facie, a deity worship may not be mentioned. But the Puranas and the Agama scriptures, basically, the Puranas and the Pancharatras, they talk extensively about deity worship because they are talking about developing a personal relationship with God, developing love for God and returning back to God. So unfortunately the Mayavadis, they interpret the deity worship, the deity as a symbol of the impersonal. You know, actually you cannot think of God, so you symbolize God in whatever form you like. Whatever form you like, you take that form and worship that God. So the Mayavadis started this Panchopasana. You know, Panchopasana is the five deities. You can deities, you choose whichever of the Ishtadeva you like. Whether it is Shiva, Shakti, then Vishnu, Surya and Ganesh. So now, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, in his Gaudiya Bhashya commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, quotes from the Pushkara Samhita, and he describes that actually these five are not equivalent. They are progressive. He describes that if somebody wants Dharma, should worship Surya. If somebody wants Artha, you should worship Ganesh. If somebody wants Kama, you should worship Shakti. If somebody wants Moksha, you should worship Shiva. And if somebody wants to go beyond Dharma, Kama and Moksha, then they can worship Vishnu. So what the idea is that it's a progression. Of course, now if you see in modern times, it seems that Surya has lost his popularity. Yeah, only one temple, a few temples of Surya like at Konark. So, we have so many deities, the temples of Ganesh, Shiva and Durga. So, the idea is that these people think that whatever form you take, it doesn't matter because ultimately you have to go beyond that to the formless. But this is not the conclusion of the Vedic literature. But this is the predominant current understanding. So, there are critics of Vedic religion who say, you know, so there is one Muslim preacher who says, now the Hindu Pandits, they say that, you know, for the less intelligent people, you need to have a symbol. And then, by the symbol, you can go beyond the symbol, to the formless. So, he says, yes, for the less intelligent people, you need a symbol. We Muslims don't need a symbol. Therefore, we are not less intelligent, we are more intelligent. And you are less intelligent. And all the Muslims clap, tali, tali, tali. And the Hindus get bewildered, oh, what to say. They don't know. So, it's a cheap argumentation. Sometimes, people, they are so ignorant, that they don't even understand ignorance. See, our acharyas, Islam was there for more than 1,000 years in India. But none of our acharyas, whether Vaishnava acharyas or Mayavadi acharyas, none of them even bothered to criticize Islam. Why? Many of them they would criticize. Vaishnava acharyas criticize Mayavad so much. Why? Because copper can be mistaken to be gold. Now, copper is polished, it can be mistaken to be gold. So, like that, Mayavad can be mistaken to be the absolute truth. So criticize Mayavad. But potato, who will mistake potato to be gold? But Kali Yuga, people don't know what is potato and what is gold. So they think potato is gold. Now this is not to disrespect Islam. You know, Muhammad Prophet, he gave some revelation and by which people can get elevated. But objectively speaking, practically speaking, there is no philosophy in the Quran. It's mostly moral codes. You know, we talk about fear, desire, duty, love. So, Islam is a religion on fear and desire. But unfortunately, because we don't preach so effectively. So people get affected by all sorts of crazy propagandas and they get influenced and they get misled completely. So Srila Prabhupada had a tremendous preaching spirit. In fact, Srila Prabhupada in his books and the Krishna conscious philosophy is such that it's so powerful, there is so much. Like if you go in a war, there is enough ammunition to blow up all the illusion, all the misconception in the world. So our philosophy is very powerful. But unfortunately, the ammunition is lying at the go down. We are not thinking so much. Of course, I am not talking about we, I am talking primarily about myself. And I am a very lazy person. So one time I just slept too much and I was very frustrated with myself. So I just started thinking. So, you know, I remembered how this whole war analogy was there in my mind. You imagine somebody, soldier goes on a battlefield and he goes to sleep over there. It is ridiculous. Now, of course, we see that happening in the battle between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna. Where Lord Shiva sends the, Lord Krishna sends the yawning weapon. And Lord Shiva starts yawning and he goes to sleep. Now, we can laugh and enjoy because it's Leela. But Banasura was not enjoying that. Banasura was angry. Now, of course, another example of sleeping is when all the Pandava warriors were sleeping and then Ashwatthama went and killed all. That is cruel. That is cruel. But actually, if you see, you know, a warrior, if he has strength but out of laziness, he goes to sleep on the battlefield. It's very tragic. You know, one of the great strengths, I recently studied a little bit of the life of Shivaji Maharaj. So, although he was completely outnumbered while fighting with the Mughals, now how he was able to win? Because of his speed. Speed of his attack. You know, Muslims, they would generally come on their chariots. And Shivaji Maharaj never used chariot. Just go on horses. So, actually, before that, the Hindus had outnumbered the Muslims. When the Muslims first attacked. But the Hindus would come on their elephants. Now, elephant is very powerful, but it is also slow. And you know, if you have to take an elephant to the war, you have to take so much food with it to the war, to feed the elephant. So what would happen is that the Muslims would attack so fast that the elephant, before they would get ready to fight, the battle would be over. Of course, the elephants at this time, they are not like the elephants which are described in the Mahabharata. You know? They were of a very extraordinary caliber. So anyway, the point is that it's described that Shivaji Maharaj sometimes for weeks he would not sleep only. He would just be riding on the back of the horse, going from one part of the country to another. You know, he would attack the enemy, defeat the enemy, and before the enemy would react, he would go and attack another camp with the enemy. And it was so swift that he won so much victory. And we see, Srila Prabhupada was so fast in the last 11 years of his life. Prabhupada was fast without being passionate. You know, we are passionate without being fast. So, actually, you know, certainly as it is said that hate the sin, not the sinner. So like that, we, you know, our acharyas have, they don't, we don't, like there are many Hindutvavadis who criticize Muslims just because they are Muslims. No, that may be to some extent fanaticism, but our acharyas distance themselves from that. But at the same time, you know, we should not hate, the, like that we can say that hate the adharma, don't hate the preachers of the adharma. Now, it's important that, yes, if we start hating those who preach adharma, then that we are going at the mundane level. We are lacking in spiritual vision. That is true. But at the same time, it is also, if we don't hate the adharma, then also we are lacking in spiritual vision. We should feel disturbed, we should feel concerned at so much atheism, materialism, pseudo-religion that is being preached. And we should try our best that we can to counter this. You know, Prabhupada has given us so much powerful weapon, such philosophy Prabhupada has given us. And not only that, Prabhupada has given us his own example of how we should preach vigorously. At his old age, Prabhupada's last days also, he was giving his Bhagavatam translations and commentaries and he was preaching. And yesterday we saw how he was Bhaktivikas Maharaj. Although he had practically no voice, still that vigor was there. So after the class I told Maharaj, Maharaj, your voice may have been feeble, but your message was extraordinarily strong. So Maharaj was laughing. So the point is that we have seen that, you know, there is so much vigor that for Acharya Dishon, before that Bhaktisthana Swami Thakur also, oh, he would preach so vigorously. So of course I am speaking all this for myself. I am a very lazy person. I am bound by my anarthas. And I seek the prayers and blessings of all of you so that I can also do some preaching and carry on the message and mission that our acharyas have given. So quickly summarize, we have a few minutes for questions. So as Thakur talked about three main points. First was to understand how scientists say that matter is everything. And that is wrong. Biology is not applied physics and chemistry, because matter, as is seen in living systems, it grows, it maintains itself, it reproduces, which non-living systems don't show. And then we discussed how this can lead to even justification of abortion and justification of calling living individuals as tissues and killing them. On the other hand, we described about how the other extreme is to say that matter has nothing to do with spirit. So that minimizes God's mercy. God is so merciful that He knows that we cannot think of anything beyond matter. So He manifests Himself as matter. So Vishwarupa is one manifestation or like that, the deity is one manifestation like that. And the Vedic understanding is very sophisticated. And if we study it, understand it, then we can propagate it vigorously. And we can counter all the illusions in the world. And as much as possible, we can take the example of our acharyas and preach as vigorously as possible. Thank you very much. Is there any question? Yes, please.
The eyes and all those things, it's like, it's a conception. It's not exactly existing like the eyes and sun and moon. And similarly, then, is it a conception, Vishwarupa, or is it something existing?
Okay. It's a good question. Is Vishwarupa a conception or is it actually existing? Now, the word Vishwarupa is used for many things. So we have to be careful what we mean. Now, this particular conception of Vishwarupa, that is the sun and moon are the eyes, the bones are the mountains are the bones. This is not exactly factual. But if you look at the form of Mahavishnu, from which the universe is emerged, or we look at the form of Garbhodaksha Vishnu, who enters into the universe, or we look at the form of Kshiradaksha Vishnu, who actually pervades as in the atoms in the heart. So if we look at it that way, then the Vishwa is the Rupa of the Lord, because the Lord is situated as the Antaryami in the Vishwa. So Ramanujacharya's philosophy, Vishishtadvaita, is that matter and spirit are the body of God. He calls them so. In that sense, we agree. So if we look at that, the Vishwa is a Rupa of God, because God is present as the super soul within it. Prabhupada takes that conception in this purport. He says, just as our body will not grow if the soul is not there, similarly, the super soul is not there, the universe will not grow, and the interaction will not take place. And that is a theme which Prabhupada talks repeatedly. So if we are talking about that, the Vishwa as a Rupa of God, that is correct. So in that, what it is not exactly that the sun and moon rise, because the Lord is His own person who is there within the Vishwa. So in that sense, He is the soul and the Vishwa is the body. So if that understanding of Vishwarupa is there, that is perfect. Now when we say, again, it is not factual. Now again, you know, either something is true or something is false. This is simplistic understanding. Now, like, you know, I said polytheism, monotheism. So, you know, is this Vishwarupa just false? Well, is anything connected with the Lord? Nothing connected with the Lord can be false. So, if you see that way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would see any forest, he would say this is Vrindavan. He would say any lake, he would say this is Yamuna. Now, think of it from an objective point of view. It's not Yamuna. It's not Govardhan. Now, if you take that objective vision further, you say, that means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a mistake. That is a big mistake, to think like that. Why? Because material reality is reality which creates illusion. No, material reality, the idea that things exist disconnected from Maya, that is what is the definition. Things disconnected from Krishna, that is the definition of Maya in Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. So, the idea that anything is disconnected from Krishna is itself Maya. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sees forest as Govardhan, it is the third category. Is it Govardhan? Is it not Govardhan? It is neither. Actually, there is achinta relationship between that forest and Govardhan. What is that relationship? That actually, the ultimate purpose of everything in the material world is to remind us of Krishna. So recently, one devotee sent me a mail that, you know, in South India Yatra, when Raghunath Maharaj was giving lecture, some of the children, you know, they were playing, and while playing, they made a beautiful Govardhan. They made a Govardhan. And then the children were playing, this devotee was thinking, oh, they are doing such nice artistry. So they made a little Radha Kund, they made little holes and everything, they made like that. And then, They said, we will go and tell Maharaj. So Maharaj just finished the lecture, the children were tried on the stage and they told Maharaj. Maharaj made Govardhan. And Maharaj came and what did he do? First thing he folded hand and did parikrama to the Govardhan. Now we may say, what is this? The children had done something. How can that be Govardhan? Why do you have to do parikrama for that? No, so the point is that God manifests through bhakti. Now, Prabhupada explains in one purport that even if in some places the deity prana pratishtha is not done, but one way to do installation of the deity is through time. That means for a long period of time, if people keep worshipping a particular form, then in reciprocation of the sincerity of that worship, the Lord will manifest. So it's not like one or zero. You know, life is not digital logic. We are used to working in computer systems. Either it is this or it is that. No, it's not like that. So, is the Vishwarup not God? No. Is the Vishwarup God? No. So, it's in between. So, Vishwarup is certainly not an eternal form of God. That is the first thing. And there is no, if you see, you know, it's not that there is a person who has eyes of the sun, who has bones. It's not like that. But when anything can help us to connect with God, then that has actually connect through our consciousness with God, that cannot be called as illusory. So when Maharaj were going around that Govardhan, what is he appreciating? He's appreciating that by the devotion of the children, they have tried to invoke the presence of Govardhan. Now certainly that Govardhan may not be the same as the original Govardhan. But we cannot say this is just imagination, this child's play. No. So like that, with whatever little trace of bhakti these pantheists have, these people who are worshipping the Vishwarup, God as the Vishwarup have, they may not necessarily be pantheists, even devotees can think like that. But whatever little they have, you know, we appreciate that devotion. So we don't call that an illusory. So that's why it's like in a category where it's not God and it is not God also. It depends on the devotion. So somebody who mistakes that to be God and that alone to be God, he is mistaken. And somebody who says that is not God, he is also mistaken. That is God, but that is a lower level manifestation of God. And we move higher to the personal manifestation of God afterwards. Okay? Yeah. Quickly.
Regarding this, the chapter's name is the creation of the universal form. So, how do you understand the creation of the universal form?
Well, Srishti. Srishti is one of the leelas of the Lord. So, Vishwarup is not manifested always. See, when the Mahapralaya takes place, everything goes back into the body of the Lord. So, when again the creation starts, at that time, the Vishwa manifests. So, in that sense, just like our form, when the body dies, the soul leaves it. And when the soul comes in, the body starts growing. So, like that, when the super soul enters, the universal form starts getting created.
This is the
creation
of the universe.
Correct. Universal form, in that sense, means universe only. But we are connecting the universe with the form of the Lord. That's why we call that it is a universal form. There are two things. There is the Vishwarupa and there is the Kala Rupa over there. So Kala Rupa was not shown to Duryodhana. Duryodhana did not see himself dying over there. Because otherwise there would have no battle. So Krishna showed his power and told him, you surrender, but did not show him the inevitability of what was going to happen directly. So the two parts are there, Vishwarupa and Kala Rupa. So Kala Rupa show that so God is not just the foundation of space and time. God is also agent in history. Agent in history means whatever is happening in this world, whatever changes are taking place, that's the plan of God. And it is God who is acting in this ways. So history, when we study, an atheist will study history as, oh, this person attacked, this person defeated, this person happened. But a devotee tries to see what is the plan of the Lord. So what is happening over there? So the Kala Rupa shows that God is not just a static background presence. But God is an active historical agent who brings about transformations in this world. So those two forms are shown. The cosmic form is the background presence of God as the substratum of everything. And the Kala Rupa is the presence of God as a historical agent. Okay. We'll have personal questions tonight. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande. Yeah.